Musical history being made, that slinky Steely Dan song Slang of Ages from the new CD, Everything Must Go. It's the first to feature lead vocals by Walter Becker. Teamed with your songwriting, production, and multi-instrumentalist skills, I'm thinking, Walter, you grew up in a musical environment. Is that true?
Well, no, actually, I grew up in the suburbs of New York City in the 50s, and so there was the music of the day around on the radio and the car radio and so on, but it was, nobody played in the house and there were no instruments. My father had been made to play the violin when he was a kid, and he was still sort of bitter about that as far as I could tell. He did have a copy of the Harvard Dictionary of Music, which I found later that I had colored when I was a little kid. That was about as far as it went, though. Aside from that, it was just what was in the air.
Right, didn't your father have a copy of the Dialogue of the Carmelites?
He got that when I was like 12 or something like that. He had like three or four records, and that was one of them. A very strange collection. It was the Dialogue of the Carmelites, an opera by Poulenc, which featured, his favorite part was the guillotining of the nuns at the end, where they sing a little dirge. And
it's my favorite part.
You hear this whack of the blade, yeah, and there's one less voice in the singing the dirge, and then another whack of the blade, and down to the last nun. And
what about you growing up? Music in the house?
Yeah, well, my mother was a singer when she was a kid, from about age 5 to 15 or something like that. She used to sing up in the Catskills at hotels and so on, sort of the Shirley Temple of the Catskills or whatever, of the Borscht Belt. And so she used to sing around the house. She knew quite a bit about swing music. And generally speaking, the women in my family, as with many sort of Depression-era Jewish families, the women could all play the piano a little bit, you know, so I just picked it up.
For many of us, Steely Dan turned us on to classic jazz, the way British invasion rockers paved our path to first-generation blues. I know you still love your roots and influences, but these days, if, let's say, you were reading a magazine and you read an article about a critically acclaimed contemporary musician, would you seek it out? Would you go, wow, this Wilco review seems interesting, or this Beck guy?
Yeah, I actually did buy the Wilco album. And I bought a couple of Beck albums, and so occasionally, not as often maybe as you might think, but once in a while.
Yeah, I'll buy something occasionally. I've got a Beck album somewhere. You know, I like TLC when they were hot. I still mainly listen to my these old jazz records, pretty much when they get, you know, they've been reissued on CD and they sound really good. And that's sort of still the staple of my, record collection.
I maybe should have asked you this before when we were talking about covers. Have you ever written a song you had hoped would be covered by a particular artist?
Well, when we first moved to California, it's because we had gotten these jobs as staff writers at ABC Dunhill Records. Our job was to write songs for the house artists. So in those days, we were trying to get songs done by other artists. Unfortunately, we didn't get very many done, and we realized very quickly we couldn't really write pop songs very well. That's when we took out our other book with the other songs in it and got a few musicians together and formed a band.
Hey 19 by Al Green.
Could have been. I don't see why not.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a good idea.
What are some of the most unlikely places you've heard your music?
It was pretty weird. Like I was in this mall in Japan when we were playing, and heard Hey 19, an instrumental version, what sounded like a Japanese choir of schoolgirls singing, you know, humming the melody, and that was pretty exciting.
You know, I don't know if I believe that story or if that was just something that you dreamed. I don't.
No, that's a true story.
We got to get a copy of that. That's.
I know. I mean, I was just so astounded, you know.
See, you can never trace something like that down. That's the thing, you know. We hear great music versions, and we never get to hear them.
As we are coming close to the end of this one-hour sale, a conversation with Steely Dan about their new album, Everything Must Go. The modern age does demand a few modern questions. One of the new songs, Pixeline, besides having a keen falsetto part, seems to be about digital delights and deceptions. Steely Dan has had its own website for about 7 years. I'm wondering if one of you is more internet interested than the other?
That would be Walter Becker.
I was living in Hawaii when the internet, when I became aware of the existence of something called the internet, and so it afforded me an opportunity to be in communication with the culture at large that was pretty new and unique. That's how I slipped into it.
Our engineer Roger Nichols was always deep into computers, going way back into the 70s, and so I think we both knew a little bit about computers, especially in regard to programs having to do with music and percussion programs, going back a ways.
Everything Must Go ends with the title track, Donald, and as you arrange the horns, you may be the one who can reveal what spurred the unusual tenor sax fanfare introduction of the title song.
Right. Well, actually, that wasn't really arranged. We originally had a piano introduction planned for Everything Must Go, and then which is actually the melody and chords of the bridge, which is stated later. But we had done this one track with this tenor player, Walt Weisskopf, and he had this kind of cosmic sound that we associate with 60s free jazz, and we realized it would be a good way to start that tune by having him state the melody, because it's sort of this incredibly grandiose introduction, you know, that get your expectations up for a song about a bunch of losers.
Well, with the song and album Everything Must Go, should we be worried about the end of Steely Dan, the end of the world? Both?
I wouldn't worry, I think.
No use worrying about it, really.
Really, we just feel that from the ruin of the old will grow the new.
Rise like a phoenix.
Yeah.
No, because there's
we're always celebrating that part of the process.
Even if the worst happens, remember, there's always mutation.